And now for something completely different.
It's a Rich Man's World. Forget everything you've been told by others before. Get ready for the real deal, the full story, real talk about money, markets, life. Now, it's The Real Investment Show with Lance Roberts, presented by RIA Advisors.
And good morning. It is 6:07 as we get this pre-hump day edition of the show underway. It's Tuesday already.
Do some tools over there.
I know, right? Just it's wiggly. yeah, so this week, busy week.
Yep.
Lots of parties going on all week.
Mm-hmm. We're worn out.
I know, right? I'd be glad when this is one of those weeks where I just, you know, I'll just be glad when Friday gets here.
Yeah. You
know, I like seeing all my friends at parties, but, you know, it's...
It's exhausting.
When you've got to get up this early to come in and do a radio show,
uh-huh.
Yeah. It gets tiring quick. So a few things we've got to get into today. You know there's trouble brewing when you have a countdown timer on CNBC. 4 days, 23 hours, you know, whatever it is, 17 minutes until tariffs are launched. Of course, you know, this weekend is the December the 15th is when the tariffs automatically go into effect on China. And, of course, the market's been rallying here over the course of the last few weeks because, well, we are very close to a trade deal. I chuckle because we've been close to a trade deal now for 18 months. Remember, trade wars are easy to win. You just slap on a few tariffs, everybody buckles under, and you get a trade deal, and everybody goes on. Life is good. Hasn't really quite worked out that way. And of course, really ever since the December 24th lows in the market from last year, the markets have been rallying on hopes that a trade deal is just around the corner. We're close to a trade deal. Trade deal's almost done. And then, of course, it wasn't done. And then now we're back to really just working on a really stripped down version of a trade deal called the Phase 1 trade deal. We're very close to getting that done. But tariffs are set to launch on Sunday. Now, my suspicion is that sometime between today and Saturday night, midnight, we are going to get a tweet from the White House that says that tariffs are being delayed as they work on getting a deal done, the Phase 1 trade deal done. Doesn't really seem to be very beneficial to hike tariffs on China when if you're truly very close to getting a trade deal done. It certainly wouldn't seem to be very logical to hike tariffs on the country that you're very close to getting a trade deal done. So my suspicion is that we're going to find out here in the next couple of days, a tweet, headline, Larry Kudlow on CNBC. one of the minions will be on media. I know, right? Talking about how trade deal is very close to being done. And so because we're close to getting a trade deal done, we're going to delay tariffs, until it's finished. Now, unfortunately, here's the other problem with this is that China has given little indication that trade talks are actually progressing at all. We've talked about before that really China has no incentive to do a trade deal to really any degree. Yes, they could agree to some minor things. They could give Trump a win very easily. They've already agreed to about 80% of the trade deal, the stuff that doesn't matter. You know, buying more agricultural products, which they need, buying more pork products, which they need, open up some access to the country, no big deal. But the big things, you know, IP theft and those things are the hanging points that China is not going to agree to. In fact, China just passed a law last week giving them full access to all data, whether it's stored in the cloud, on a server, whatever it is, the state has access to everything. So much for IP theft protection, right? If you're operating in China, everything on your server is fully available to the Chinese government. But nonetheless, this is kind of, like I said, they don't really have an incentive. I mean, if you're China and you've got a 2050 economic plan, this is 2020, by the way, So you've got a 30-year economic vision. Why are you going to agree to anything with a president that's only in office for four more years? Right? Doesn't really make a lot of sense. President Xi is in office for life. He doesn't have to deal with terms. So the reality is that this trade deal is going to stall at some point. And the pressure, of course, is going to be on the financial markets, which have been really kind of pricing in the perfect condition of getting a trade deal completed. So we'll see what happens here as we move into next year. Now, there's a couple of things that are going on that we'll talk about today. One of those is, of course, what's happening with the Federal Reserve and this overnight kind of repo lending rate. And we talked about a while back that when the Fed launched these emergency repurchase operations, that's what repo is, repurchase operations, that our suspicion was is that somebody was in trouble because there was plenty of excess reserves for the banks to access. And just a quick reminder of what the Federal Reserve is doing is simply that they provide liquidity currently for overnight needs, financing needs. So typically the way it works is a bank has a large cash transfer that they need to make for, you know, some reason, payroll, whatever it is for, you know, a bunch of companies. So they have a big need for cash overnight. So they pledge treasuries, they pledge, you know, mortgage-backed securities, 100% collateral for the money they borrow from the Fed at a very low interest rate, which is the rate that the Fed charges to the banks, the overnight lending rate. That's a very low-cost loan overnight, and it's settled up the next day. All of a sudden, in September, those rates went to 8%. Now, you think about this, and we've used the analogy before, is this is your brother comes over to your house and says, hey, I've got a brand new, fully paid for Mercedes AMG sitting in the driveway. I need to borrow 10 grand. Here's my keys as collateral. And I'll pay you back tomorrow. And you say, no, I'm not going to lend it to you. Now, you're fully collateralized, right? You've got a brand new Mercedes, fully paid for AMG in the driveway, and you won't lend your brother 10 grand? Well, that's what's happening at the banks. We now know the Bank of International Settlements yesterday, which is the Bank of International Settlements is basically the central banker's central bank, talked about yesterday what might have actually occurred. And we now know that the issues may be a little bit more systemic than we thought. So we'll talk about that when we come back from the break. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. Don't go away.
Get daily investment news you can use. Delivered at the speed of the internet. Sign up for the Real Investment Report now at realinvestmentadvice.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with our RIA advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlocks. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help to determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlocks, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab, RIAAdvisors.com.
And welcome back this morning at 6:17 as we get our show underway today. And of course, it's supposed to be cold this week, right? Supposed to get a cold blast coming in.
It's already dropping.
It's coming?
Yep.
So I probably didn't dress warm enough today?
Yeah, you probably missed that cue.
I woke up this morning. I was so tired. I was like stumbling into the closet. I'm like, okay, let's just get something on.
What's simple?
Exactly. Anyway, so just for the break, talking a little bit about the issue of this repo action that's been going on by the Federal Reserve. And of course, everybody's kind of scratching their head. They're like, as I said in the last break, this is basically guaranteed money. Banks put up collateral overnight, fully securitized loans for overnight lending. And all of a sudden, banks don't want to lend to each other. So the question was, like, what happened, right? And so our suspicion was is that somebody had gotten in trouble. Now, the Federal Reserve is not going to release the information about who they were providing money to for 2 years. They sealed the documents, which also kind of makes you wonder what's going on, right? I mean, it's no big deal, right? This is just normal operations, just banks need overnight cash. Well, then why are you sealing the records for 2 years, right? So it's a little bit suspicious. Now, let me step back one thing here real quick about how banking works. You get paid, right? And so you go down to the bank and you deposit your cash into your checking account, right? This is called a demand account. So savings accounts and checking accounts, they're demand accounts. In other words, you can show up and demand your money at any time. There's no money in your account. Everybody just went, what? Yeah, there's no money in your account, right? When you make your deposit, there's a accounting record of your deposit, but there's actually no money sitting in an account with your name on it, right? So that you show up at the bank, they go to your little vault, and they get your money out that you deposit, and they hand it to you. Because U.S. banks work on what's called fractional reserve banking. They hold a very small fraction of the reserves, and they loan out and use leverage for the rest of their operations. So the money that is loaned out by the bank for, you know, bank loans and credit cards and blah, 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 is all greatly more than what their deposits are, right? And this is fractional reserve banking. This is a very simplistic view of it, by the way. You know, you think about it this way is that, you know, somebody comes up and they give you a dollar bill and you loan out nine more dollars, right? So as long as you don't have a run, what's called a run on the bank. Now, if everybody shows up at the bank all at once and they say, hey, I want my cash out of my account, that's called a run on the bank. And all of a sudden you have problems because the bank doesn't have the cash to redeem everybody all at once. As long as operations are smoothly functioning, right? There's demands coming in for the cash that they have to pay out, and they're loaning out the rest of it in various forms, and it's all fine and dandy until something goes wrong. And all of a sudden, there's a big need for cash all at once. Well, when that happens, when there's a big need for cash all at once, then all of a sudden, the banks have to go to the overnight lending market, and they borrow money from other banks. So J.P. Morgan goes to Citibank and says, hey, I need $2 billion to meet a demand on the other side of the window. And so Citibank lends J.P. Morgan $2 billion overnight. Everything's settled up the next day. J.P. Morgan gives collateral to Citibank to match the overnight lend, and the functions operate. All of a sudden, though, that window broke. J.P. Morgan was, I'm using hypothetical here, but say J.P. Morgan said, hey, I need to borrow $2 billion to meet an outflow need. And everybody said, nah, we'll loan it to you, but it's going to be at 8%, not 2. Everybody went, what? And so everything kind of went haywire all of a sudden. And then, of course, the Fed stepped in and said, don't worry, we'll supply the collateral and we'll supply the cash. You give us the collateral, we'll give you the cash. And so the Fed window began providing the repurchase operations. Now, this is a bit of a kind of a mess that the Federal Reserve got themselves into. All of a sudden, banks are going, why am I going to lend to somebody else overnight when they can just go to the Fed and get it, right? I'm going to keep my cash. I'm going to keep my stuff because I need it. And everybody else can just go to the Fed, but that's not the way it's supposed to work. The Fed is supposed to be there kind of as a last resort vehicle, and the banks are supposed to all operate amongst themselves for the most part. All of a sudden, that broke. So now the Federal Reserve is having to pump in $60 billion a month on liquidity to try to keep the system operating. So everybody's been scratching their head going, well, what broke? Something broke. Right, you don't have this type of spike in overnight lending rates and the need for the Federal Reserve to step in to provide liquidity unless there's a problem. And so the question becomes, well, what happened? What was the problem? Again, we don't know for sure. And we won't know for 2 years because, like I said before, the records have been sealed. And again, you have to ask yourself the question, well, why do they seal the records? If it's no big deal, if it's just normal operations of banks, who cares? Well, as I said, the Bank of International Settlements came out yesterday. And the Bank of International Settlements, which is the BIS, they're basically the central bank's bank. Or banker, I should say. And what the BIS said was, is that basically hedge funds, big ones, 0.72, Citadel, etc., had gotten into a problem of basically needing liquidity. And when those hedge funds showed up at their bank, and so let's say that Citadel uses J.P. Morgan, I'm assuming, right? Just making, I don't know which bank they actually use, but they showed up at the bank and they said, we need overnight collateral. We need overnight liquidity. Here's our collateral. And the bank said, nah, well, you know, we're going to give it to you at 8%. They're like, what? Why? So all of a sudden, there became a problem, a systemic problem within the markets. And so the Federal Reserve said, okay, we have two options. Either we can just stand back here and we can just let this play out on its own. And if we do that, we're potentially going to have a very, very, if that hedge fund is required to liquidate, we're going to have a very big decline in the market. We'll have a 1987 type event in the market. And the problem with that becomes the simple issue that a very sharp decline in the market leads to all other kinds of systemic problems within the economy. You get, you know, an immediate recession, potentially. You get a lot of other crises that may pop up because you've got a very stretched system currently. So, you know, a 2 or 3 day plunge in the markets would immediately foster fears of, you know, 2007 type financial crisis, 2008 type financial crisis. That runs through the rest of the system. So the Federal Reserve said, okay, we can't allow that to happen. So we're going to have to step in and provide these operations to basically, and these are my words, not the BIS, is basically bail out these hedge funds, provide the liquidity for them. So now they've created another problem. The first problem they had was they've now become the lender of last resort. And the second problem now is that they've created is that now they are also the absolute liquidity provider of the only resort. Because now the banks know that, hey, if a hedge fund that we're dealing with runs into a problem, we don't have to put up our cash. We'll just let them go to the Fed and get the cash from the Fed. So now the Federal Reserve has put themselves in a position where they cannot extract themselves from the financial markets at all. And that's not their role. The Federal Reserve's role is, in terms of monetary policy, is simply two things. Is to foster full employment and to make sure inflation remains in some sort of check, right? Just not kind of run out of hand. Because the Fed is terrified of a 1970s type inflationary spike. That's their big concern. And ever since 1980, they've been doing everything they can to make sure that interest rates and inflation remain low enough that it fosters, and these two things are linked, that low inflation, low interest rates foster full employment, right? So that's their job, not all this other stuff that they've been doing. But now they've put themselves in a position that they are now heavily entrenched in the support of the financial markets because the financial markets are directly linked to what's going to happen with the job market, right? The employment market. And especially this late in the cycle, there's much less ability for the Fed to maneuver effectively to try to change that dynamic. We saw what happened in 2018. In 2018, they tried to hike rates a bit. They said, okay, look, inflation's coming back. We've got some early signs of inflationary pressures. We've got full employment and full employment should lead to rising inflation because full employment leads to higher wages, which leads to higher prices, which leads to inflation. So the Fed tried to hike interest rates. They made it about two ticks before the whole thing fell apart. And the markets declined by 20%. And all of a sudden, we're back to basically doing quantitative easing, cutting interest rates, talking up markets, because that's how sensitive the entire system has now become to market prices. And it's a dangerous situation that we're in, because at some point, the Federal Reserve won't be able to stop the ultimate decline. And by not allowing the system to kind of have a controlled correction, which they should have done in 2018, and allow the system to correct itself, allowed some of the liquidity and excess to come out of the markets, they actually made it worse. Come back after the break. I don't want him, couldn't stand him. It was a good, so I now come on, what was I supposed to do? He was out of town and his two friends were so fine. Got questions for Lance later? Ask now at realinvestmentadvice.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with RIA Advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlock. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlock, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab. RIAAdvisors.com.
And welcome back to the show. This morning, as talk about what's happening around the world. You know, it's interesting because, you know, currently right now, the U.S. economy is doing fairly well. If you look at the metrics, you know, we just had this employment report on Friday. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, that, you know, while we had a strong employment report, a lot of it was because of what was happening with the GM workers coming back to work, et cetera. So, yeah, it was a good number regardless. And take a look at kind of the rest of the world, and the rest of the world really not doing so well. Got, you know, lots of countries on the verge of recession, you know, interest rates, negative rates, et cetera. Manufacturing really kind of globally remains very weak. One of the kind of the more interesting indicators, we buy a lot of stuff from South Korea. They produce a lot of products that we consume here. And so one of the kind of a very highly correlated indicator relative to the U.S. economy is South Korean exports. Because, again, we buy a lot of stuff from them. And so when those exports fall, and we actually saw this in the trade numbers just recently, imports were very weak into the U.S., and particularly from China and from South Korea and others. So what that tells you is the consumers are actually buying less. Right. So if imports are falling, we had a narrower trade deficit. Our trade deficit narrowed because imports fell faster than exports. And, you know, that's an important point because that means that we're consuming less, and consumption is 70% of the economy. So it's something that you pay attention to. But yet it doesn't seem to be affecting anything at this point. Everything seems to be kind of going just kind of gangbusters. Most of the economic data is good. Consumption, retail sales seem to be okay. Now, we're going to get some revisions to a lot of this data over the course of the next few months, right? So we'll see, you know, coming out of the Black Friday, or the, I should say, coming out of Black Week and then Cyber Week, because it's no longer a day, right? It's no longer Black Friday. It's Black Week, because we started sometime in October. But, you know, I figure we're going to get to the point, Brent, at some point that Black Friday will start the day after Thanksgiving and run until Wednesday of the next year. So it'll just be,
I'm say, right after the 4th of July.
Exactly.
You know, let's just one big blend.
Exactly. July 4th holiday shopping to Black Friday.
You have two shopping periods.
Exactly.
Hot and cold weather.
But yeah, so this is kind of the issue. And But like I said, you know, we'll see. You know, those are all estimates right now about, you know, how good the holiday shopping was. But again, you know, two things. We look at the numbers. Were the numbers higher? Yes. What we don't talk about, of course, is that the population is larger. So you have more people shopping. As the population grows, more demand, right? So just by a simple function of population growth, you're going to have higher sales. So the question really becomes down to retail sales per capita, and are we actually strongly growing? And we'll find out here in the next couple of months, because we'll actually have the data, won't be estimates, and we'll actually have some data to work with, and we can actually tell just how strong the sales were. But the point, though, is that, you know, overall, we see lots of evidentiary signs that, well, everything's kind of going well. And what you look for is you look for things that are kind of a little bit stupid that people are, you know, buying and spending money on. And so, like, just recently, this lady just kind of throws a pile of stuff on the floor and somebody bought it for $220,000. And you go, what? And that's just people with too much money and too little sense, right? Few months ago was the rabbit that was sculpted out of aluminum. It was an aluminum rabbit. Or was it I'm not sure. It was either aluminum or stainless steel. I think it was maybe aluminum. But anyway, so this it's just basically a rabbit. It looks like the Energizer Bunny made out of metal and sold for a couple $1 million. And, you know, so everybody's like, what? Exactly.
Well, the bidding on that
was crazy.
Kept going and going.
Exactly. Of course, you know, and of course, some of the latest kind of, and of course, the one thing that's been all over the headlines here just lately was the banana that was actually taped to a wall with duct tape. So this artist takes a piece of duct tape and tapes a banana, a real banana, actual banana to the wall. And somebody paid $120,000 for it. Now, interestingly enough, a performance artist came into the art gallery where this was, and he pulled the banana off the wall and ate it. And everybody was upset. It's like, oh my gosh, how could you eat this art that somebody came with? But so here's the thing, though.
It was performance art.
It was performance art. Correct. But here's the thing, right? People don't buy the art. You buy the certificate of authenticity, right? So even the certificate of authenticity says that you've bought this original work of art, and if the banana rots or whatever, you can replace it, and it's completely fine. So eating the banana didn't change anything. So the owner of the art still has a certificate of authenticity, so they just go buy another banana, they stick it on the wall and put some duct tape over it, and it's still valid art worth $120,000.
Makes the purchase more appealing.
Correct. I went down to Michael's over the weekend.
Yes.
Yes, and I bought, I have a different theory. I bought all types of plastic fruit that I'm now going to be taping to walls everywhere in the office with duct tape. So these are all going on bid for $50,000. We're going to do a discount.
Sure.
Right. So if you're interested in my art for $50,000 for a piece of you know, fake fruit taped to the wall, I'm sure Russell's going to line right up. He'll be one of my first buyers. Yeah. Right.
He's, he's quite the connoisseur.
Yeah, exactly. What's your favorite fruit, Russell? I'll save that for you.
Let's say grapes.
Grapes. All right. We'll do grapes and duct tape for Russell. Yep. And so that one's done. And so apples, oranges, pineapples. The watermelon was a bit tough with the duct tape.
And you got to be careful with the eggplant.
For more reasons than one.
Just saying.
Yeah, but it's just, but this is kind of the height of where we're at. This is what happened. And here's the point about this, right? We joke and we jest, but this is really kind of the peak of what you see, excuse me, at the end of economic expansions and kind of towards the end of market cycles, where common sense kind of goes out the window and people start doing kind of stupid things with money. And there's been a good bit of evidence of this over the last couple of years with, you know, people in China paying enormous sums for prints of Homer Simpson. I jest you not. This is true. But that's what you see. So again, you know, this is kind of where we are within the cycle. And it's always interesting. Now, the latest, by the way, the latest evolution of this banana art was, so the artist tapes the banana to the wall with duct tape, sells it for $120,000. The performance artist comes in, eats the banana for nothing. He didn't get anything for that, but he made his mark, right? He got publicity out of that.
He should have sold tickets.
And then somebody came in and vandalized the space that where the banana was and says, quote unquote, in spray paint, "Epstein didn't kill himself." And which has now been covered up with a placard. Mm-hmm. But the funniest part of that was that he misspelled Epstein. So not only was he a vandal, he was an illiterate vandal, which may have value in and of itself. Somebody should like cut out the sheetrock and maybe sell that for $120,000.
So it's Epstein?
Exactly. And there's somewhere in the country right now, there's a guy that spells Epstein, E-P-S-T-I-E. And he's like, "You're right, I didn't kill myself. I'm still here." Yeah, this is where we've gotten to.
Man.
But, it was only a function of time until somebody did this. Anyway, but this is what you see at the end of cycles. So just kind of pay attention to this. It's just kind of the ongoing thing. All right, when we come back, we'll wrap up the show. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. Get by the website today. We've got new articles coming out as well. It's technically speaking Tuesday, so we've got an article on monthly buy signals and what that actually means on the website today, realinvestmentadvice.com. We'll be right back.
Real Investment Show podcasts are now available on iTunes.
Listen anyplace, anytime
at itunes.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with RIA Advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlocks. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help to determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve it. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlocks, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab, RIAAdvisors.com.
And welcome back to us this morning at 6:47. So Merriam-Webster has announced their word of the year.
Ah.
What do you think it is?
I have no idea this year. I mean, anything goes.
Sure. It's probably a very complex word, though, right?
Multisyllable.
Multisyllable.
Polysyllabic.
Probably something that has some very deep meaning to it. I mean, that would be the word of the year, right?
Yes.
Something very important.
Yes. Impactful.
Yes. And so forgive me if I mispronounce this word because it is very difficult.
All right.
They.
They.
They is the word of the year. Now, there's people Googling the word they. So how did they come up with the word of the year, right? It's how many people Googled it.
Right. Oh, really?
Yes. So people are either looking up the word they because they need to know how to spell it correctly, which would bring the words there and there to context.
My goodness.
And your.
Two.
Exactly. And yes, those also. T-O-O. Anyway, but no, it's the word they. And of course, the language mavens at Merriam-Webster have declared the personal pronoun their word of the year based on a 313% increase in lookups on the company's search site. Of course, this was brought about by the whole, how do you identify yourself pronoun issue? He, she, or they, or however you wish to identify yourself.
I'm going back to the old he, she, or it. Because that's how I learned it.
You are not.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are not they.
And proud of it.
Other words that also have reached the, were the inclusions, I should say, the runner-ups to the word they, right? Quid pro quo.
That's three words.
That's three words, but it was also highly looked up. Can't imagine why, considering it's on CNN literally every day, 24 hours a day.
And there's a renewed interest in Latin.
Yes, there is. Impeach, also.
Not a fruit.
Yes, a lot, you know, somebody was looking to, you know, duct tape and impeach to the wall. And a crawdad. Crawdad was one of the higher looked up words after Delia Evans' best-selling novels, Where the Crawdads Sing. So after it came out, there was a big search spike in what is actually a crawdad. Apparently people living outside the state of Louisiana.
Well, it's a noun and a verb.
This is correct. Top 10 also included egregious, clemency, and the word the. Because apparently people were misspelling the word they where they were looking it up on the website. No, it's actually the word the was also looked up dramatically for some reason. This followed the Ohio State University trying to patent the word the,
yes,
which they failed. It's kind of hard to it's kind of hard to patent a conjunction. So, anyway. Also in the mix for the word of the year, the word snitty.
I like that one.
Which emerged on the lips of Attorney General William Barr in reference to the letter by Robert Mueller about a summary Barr wrote of the Mueller report. There's too many Muellers and too many Barrs in that one sentence.
Don't get snitty with me.
We should bar Mueller in that sentence. Washington Post columnist George Will to thank for the... word. This is actually, see, this should be your word of the year, right? Because again, now correct, you know, forgive me if I mispronounce this word because it's very likely. Tergiversation.
What?
Yes. The word meaning an evasion or desertion, Merriam-Webster's top lookup, January 24th, after columnist George Will used it in a column in reference to Lindsey Graham. Now, see, people looked up that word going, what the hell does that mean?
Nobody knew.
Right. So that, see, that should be your word of the year right there, right? Just because it's a complex word whose people don't understand the meaning. I mean, you know, this, you know, have you ever had one of those like word of the day things?
I get a feed.
Yeah. And they give you a word of the day and you learn a new word for the English language.
Right.
Because the average person has a vocabulary of about 250 words. So if you have your vocabulary is deeper than 250 words, you're actually a very smart individual.
A fraction of them are blue adjectives.
That's ba-da-pop. They. The words camp and
camp?
Camp.
Really?
Rounded out the top 10 list. I don't know why the word camp. It doesn't say why the word camp was in the top 10.
Not a lot of scouts in the crowd.
Probably. What's camp? Oh, that's something you're outside? There's no Wi-Fi? Forget that.
This one time at band camp?
Oh, the old American pie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's no Wi-Fi outside. You can't be on social media generally while you're camping. So people are like going, what the hell is camping? That doesn't happen anymore. Futures are down this morning, again, kind of over concerns about whether or not this U.S.-China trade deal is going to conclude this week. And actually, a report says that a trade deal this week is unlikely. And, you know, this is, you know, not surprising. Again, we're not close to a trade deal. We're being told that simply because that helps, you know, support markets and keeps everybody happy at the moment, which is fine. No problem with that. But we're likely not very close to a trade deal. Again, it's you know, a complex situation that China does not want to get themselves into, and they don't want to agree to something that they've got to deal with over the long term that's not beneficial for their economy. But, you know, the issue is simply now really what happens with tariffs. If we're not close to a trade deal, and again, my assumption is, and we'll see over the next couple of days, is that if you are close to a trade deal, and I think this is really kind of the telltale measure of just how close to a trade deal we actually are. If you're negotiating something, you know, Brent and I are negotiating a deal, and say Brent and I are negotiating his salary, right? Just as an example. And Brent has a certain service that he provides that he's very valuable at, right? So he's our producer, executive producer of the show. He knows how to run all these gadgets and keep them working and keeps the show running. So it's a very important service. Can't replace that very easily. So he's got power, right, in this negotiation. I have the power of the salary. So we can negotiate, right? And so if we're close to a negotiation, I'm not going to penalize Brent in some manner that makes him unwilling to work, right? Brent and I are negotiating salary. He wants a raise. I'm saying no, right? Because I always say no. And he says, well, fine, I'm just not going to work, right? If you don't give me a raise, I'm not going to work, okay? And I say, well, fine, if you don't work, that's fine. I'm not only going to fire you, I'm also going to penalize you in some other manner. So that becomes a very contentious negotiation. If we're very close to an agreement, I'm not going to throw out a penalty that pushes him away from the negotiating table. So that's what I'm saying. If we are, and so I think you need to look at this from this standpoint, which is that if we are truly close to a trade deal, you're not going to hike tariffs on the 15th because you wouldn't want to push the negotiations off the table. Right? Oh, now you've penalized me. Now I'm just going to back up and you know, we're going to rediscuss the whole thing, right? If you aren't close to a trade deal, if you really are not close to a trade deal and things are really much further apart than what you're telling the American people, then hiking tariffs really won't make any difference. And so you might as well hike tariffs hoping that you can get them to come to the table to get those tariffs removed. So what happens by Sunday on the 15th will tell you much about exactly where we are in this trade negotiation process. So kind of pay attention to this. I think it's more important than people are really kind of giving it credence for in terms of telling you actually where we are within this cycle. Now, we're going to hear lots of talk this week, mind you. And I suspect by the end of the day, if the market sells off again today, we were down about 7-8 points yesterday on the S&P. We're looking to be down about 10 or so at the open this morning. And if the market sells off today, we're down, say, 10-15 points by the end of the day. Don't be surprised that we don't hear a tweet from the White House saying, hey, we're really close to a trade deal, because the White House has now figured out if they throw that little tweet out there, well, markets will turn around and run back up. So it keeps the markets intact and keeps his approval rating up, and it's all good. But I think you really need to pay attention to what's actually happening with the trade deal itself, because, you know, if these tariffs go into effect this weekend, I think it tells you a lot more about where we are in the current cycle. You know, some of the, and again, these tariffs are more important than the ones we've had before. The tariffs before were on agricultural products, they were on manufacturing products, etc. These tariffs, the ones on the 15th, are coming right before the Christmas holidays. Now, even if the tariffs go into effect, they probably won't go into effect till after January the 1st. But these tariffs directly impact consumer products. Apple products, Samsung products, technology products, you know, these type of things. Anything that has got manufactured technology components, et cetera, that are manufactured in China are going to have a tariff applied to them. So this is going to apply to a lot of consumer discretionary type goods that are manufactured, or parts of them are manufactured in China and then sold in the U.S. So again, these tariffs, like I said, are more important, because while the other tariffs also impact consumer prices, and right, we've seen prices go up as those tariffs get passed through. These are actually going to impact the consumer right where they live. This is going to be the stuff that they're buying right now, and this is stuff that's going to impact their corporate pocketbook and their personal pocketbook, and the decision of whether they buy or sell. discretionary products in the near term. So pay attention. These tariffs, again, very important here. So we'll watch what happens this week. But again, the market's going to be a little bit off this morning, but we'll see how the markets kind of shake it out. Again, the market's really kind of hoping here that we're going to get these trade, these tariffs kind of delayed. I expect that to be the case. That would be supportive of the markets this week. So again, we'll just keep a watch out. We'll come back. We'll talk about this more tomorrow and follow up and see where we are, because again, this is going to start to develop here over the next couple of days. Have a great day. It's going to get cold, so enjoy that the cold weather. And be sure you're by the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Send us your questions, comments, emails. Get our latest updates. Our Technically Speaking post is out. Our newsletter is out. It's on the website, along with our latest podcast with Tommy Thornton. It's on the website as well under our YouTube channel. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel and our newsletter. We'll keep you updated on everything that we've got going on. Realinvestmentadvice.com. We'll see you tomorrow. It's a rich man's world.